You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Mark Leibovit, editor and publisher of the Leibovit VR newsletters, also known as VRTrader.com. He's speaking to us from Arizona. Welcome back to the show.
Glad to be here, Jim.
Mark, the stock markets had a shortened week in Canada, closed for Canada Day on Wednesday, and in the U.S. they're closed Friday for the 4th. Kind of quiet during the week?
Well, they say most institutional players, you know, sort of hedge their positions and become less active during the long holiday periods, and volume also tends to dry up. So that was part and parcel, I think, to the week. So I think that's really, you know, the story here. But there's still plenty of volatility. But, you know, the big story today was pretty much, or maybe the last couple of days, is the divergence between, I guess, what you call the old economy stocks and the AI technical stocks. The Dow actually posted a new record high today, which is interesting, and the S&P was unchanged, and the NASDAQ were sold. They lost about 0.8%, 0.08%, mostly semiconductor and AI related today. So it was a divergence in the market. You know, some that argue that scared money from Europe and other places coming to the U.S. markets, in particular Dow Jones Industrials, more so than the NASDAQ, and to a lesser degree the S&P, thinking that that's sort of a safe haven for money, which is one of the rationales why the Dow is able to outperform now. And also, since the profit taking coming into the high tech names and the semiconductor names and so forth, market players are looking for diversification, and many of the I don't want to call them smokestack stocks, but the more common names are have been in the Dow Jones Industrial Average, which is only 30 stocks. So, you know, money coming into that tends to create that outperformance effect, which I think is why you've seen the Dow go higher and may continue to go higher, particularly if foreign funds, you know, seek safety and they rather go into the Dow. But, you know, they're moving other big names into the Dow, you know, NVIDIA, and they have Apple Computer, and they're putting, you know, stuff in there, and who knows, maybe they're going to put SpaceX in there. There's talk about getting SpaceX into the NASDAQ index. It's coming up, I don't know exact date, but it's supposed to come up pretty soon, which supports some of the NASDAQ-related ETFs and so forth. But there are some couple high-tech names moving into the Dow, so maybe the old smokestack theory or the safety stock names, you know, that used to be in there are disappearing, and they're putting, more of the high-flyer names in there, so they may distort the Dow. You know, I've always been a critic. It's been a useless criticism because I have no authority about it, but over the years, you know, they play with the Dow Industrial Average. They take out names that are underperforming. They put in new hot names. And usually after the hot names have made big moves, you know, they become big household name stocks, then they stick them in the Dow. You know, it's sort of, you know, they're sort of, putting lipstick on the pig, so to speak. You know, they're making it look better than it might normally have been by adding names that had been hot but many occasions. And I think history bears this out. You'll see the bigger names come in toward the end of the big moves, or after they've already made some pretty big moves. You know, they're not catching them early. So it's an internal political decision at Dow Jones, how they create that average. They pull out names, put in other ones. So I don't have the current list in front of me. I know they took Verizon out of the average, and I think they, I don't know what they added. I have to go check the schedule here. But, they took out some names. I remember way back in a couple decades or several decades ago, like a name like International Harvester was like a component of the Dow Industrials, because that was sort of a basic industry type stock, and they took that out decades ago, and they put some other high flyer in there. So they've been changing it over the years. So the action pretty much wasn't bearish today in the market, and more rotational in a way. And the big economic story today was the June employment report. So from what we're reading, I'm not a big supporter or believer in all these numbers. You know, I've always been a skeptic about any government report. I believe industrial, non-government reports more than I believe government reports. But anyway, they say payroll growth came in below expectations today, and everybody was holding their breath for this report. So in addition, they revised previous months lower. So they say the unemployment rate slipped to 4.2%. Though that not much of a decline, it came in below expectations, which is good. So they interpreted this that the economy is slowing but not collapsing, and it gives the Federal Reserve more flexibility, supposedly, with this whole discussion about lowering rates or raising rates and so forth. So it's really a circus. You know, when I read this stuff, you know, you sort of laugh how they're going to interpret these numbers. Are the numbers really legitimate? And if they aren't, or they are, and what does it mean? But anyway, if interest rate expectations are, you know, more positive, meaning that they believe the Fed's not going to raise their rates or do tightening, so that's good news for home builders, which have been doing better recently. And in fact, today, we're big stock. Home Depot was making another little recovery high, not an all-time high, but just a new recovery high. So home builders, utilities, let's see here, some dividend stocks, REITs, and precious metals, they all bounced a bit because of this expectation of lower of rates or non-raising of rates. So, you know, think about it. I mean, Kevin Warsh wasn't put in there to raise rates. So, you know, I think they misinterpreted a lot of his comments. So I think ultimately, you know, he probably will lower rates. But there's so much going on, and we've discussed this a number of times, that I'm sort of a outlier in my opinion about the Fed and whether it should even exist, and what it really does and what it does secretly, and the damage it's done over the decades, and on and on and on. But everybody keeps focusing on the Fed, and what it's going to do. You know, I just think there's, you know, much more important other things going on out there. You know, the that legislation that's been bandied about, you know, revaluing the, well, I don't know if they need legislation to do it, but they're talking about, you know, repricing gold in terms of where it's being held on the books in the U.S., you know, where they have it at $42 an ounce, and repricing it to where it should be based on current market conditions, which would help improve the books, so to speak, the government books, to say that the value of the gold holdings are substantially higher than they are. So that kind of stuff is more meaningful to me than what the Fed is doing minute to minute here. But anyway, the Fed is a big part of everybody's discussion. They hold their breath about it. And when you think about it, you really need to be looking at the charts and see what the charts are saying, and, you know, stop worrying about what the Fed's doing and not doing. In fact, Warsh has been saying he's going to be doing less in terms of talking and forecasting, as previous Fed chairmen have done. You know, they talk too much, or I think it all started with Alan Greenspan, who unfortunately just passed away, I believe, this past week at age 100, which is just remarkable in and of itself. Sort of a hero in the entire investment world, even though we had some criticism about the way he conducted Fed policy at the time, but still, a real leader in the whole, you know, economic forecasting field and so forth. Remember, he came up with the expression, irrational exuberance. If you remember that from the 1980s or 90s, and that's been used as sort of a common phrase now in terms of just about any time we see markets going up or doing something unexpected. So he sort of coined that that whole phrase. So he's really made a mark for himself and for the industry. But anyway, so he had just passed away. And unfortunately, you know, the history of the Fed isn't that great. But, you know, Warsh is there. And there have been those, even in Congress, that have suggested it's time to reevaluate the Fed's importance and effect upon what it does or doesn't do. And there have been some bills inserted in the U.S. Congress about abolishing it. And, you know, it's not going anywhere now. It may eventually. We'll see. But I think the bottom line is with Warsh's appointment, you know, you're not going to see higher rates. So despite what he might be interpreting his comments incorrectly, because he really made very few comments, but I don't think President Trump approved him or nominated him, so he would be a hawk. He's looking for a dove, so I think that will eventually help the markets, who use that information as a bullish trigger. Truth is, when you raise rates, you're actually causing inflation. That's what history really says. And I've been writing about this in my newsletter forever. You know, it increases costs for companies, have to pass it on to consumers, cost of operations and everything else. So raising rates is not the way you slow inflation. That makes it worse. So hopefully he recognizes that. And there's so many ways of measuring inflation. We talk about that all day, you know, what's really the component of the indexes and the tools that are used to create the numbers that they come out with. And it's really a circus, because they don't include everything that should be including in many of these inflation reports, you know, like energy or food and so forth are excluded in some of the numbers. So anyway, I'm just sort of ranting and raving here a little bit about what's happened in the market. You got a long holiday weekend coming up. On a cyclical basis, you know, we just passed through the summer solstice, the end of June, and, you know, you tend to get some market indigestion or change of direction around these periods, and we just saw that with regard to Micron, the semiconductor names, some of the high-tech names start to sell off here just as the summer solstice hit. So I think we will bullseye on our recognition. There might be some changes in the market here, which I think really has happened. You know, you saw the little bottoming action in the gold market and the silver market during this time frame. We're starting to recover a little bit now, so we'll see if that continues. Seasonality generally says you hit a low in, you know, late June, early July in the metals. So we're getting a little bounce here. Whether it holds or not, we'll see. But that's sort of the seasonal tendency there. And we're in this period called Mercury retrograde, which astrologers use, but it's like looking at the lunar cycles. It's something which I pay attention to, and that runs from the June 29th until just about the end of July. And the Mercury retrograde is just a period where you get a lot of volatility in the markets, a lot of choppiness. Doesn't mean it's going to go down. It just means you might get some false starts in different directions during this, it's about 25 day period. So we're in that. And, so we're just sort of watching those as, you know, cyclical indicators on top of what we look at in the terms of the technical stuff. So bottom line is strength in the Dow. Some of the high techs are there, taking some profits here. We're getting some rotation into other names. You know, I already mentioned that home builders, utilities, dividend stocks, REITs, and, you know, precious metals are getting a little bit of a bounce. And we're also watching some other things here. We're watching the cannabis legislation and the crypto legislation too, which are still you know, both pending. You know, we're still waiting to see whether they're going to reschedule cannabis. Many of the stocks have been showing some life here recently on the hope that you get the rescheduling from one down to three in terms of cannabis. And hopefully there's some progress made with a banking act on top of that. But there's been some life in some of the cannabis stocks. And on the crypto side, everybody's holding their breath with regard to the Clarity Act that's being held up in the Senate. This is the Clarity Act, which was passed by the House of Representatives. So it basically advances crypto legislation, digital assets, and you know, many institutional people. Secretary Treasury Bessent has been pushing for that passage, and you know, there's several issues on the table, you know, with regard to the negotiations about, you know, what institutions, what banks want, and so forth. So, you know, we can detail that more in our newsletters. But you know, it's also a political volleyball of some sorts too. We have some Democrat support for it, so it's not only just a Republican issue. There's been some criticism that, you know, Donald Trump and the family have benefited financially from the crypto market, Bitcoin, or thereabouts related. I don't know all the details, so I guess in a certain sense it becomes sort of a political football, but there's so many institutional needs and use for many of the cryptos. It's being used all over the world in terms of, you know, transactions and so forth. I have some interesting visuals that I pasted into my newsletter showing where it's being used and how important it is to conducting commerce around the world with many of the smaller cryptos out there. So they really need the Clarity Act passed. They may not. There was some prediction it would happen by the 4th of July, and obviously that's not happening, but hopefully by the end of the year. So that's sort of what the crypto market is focusing on. And we know Bitcoin has been weak, but that's not really the big story. I mean, many of these altcoins and other coins that are out there to be used in commerce are not related to what Bitcoin was created for, and it's a whole different universe in terms of usage and applicability. So I think we'll see how that all plays out. So we're watching all that kind of stuff. And it's, you know, between the cannabis story and the crypto story could stretch throughout the year. Doesn't mean it's going to be resolved this summer, but everybody is watching that. And I think pretty much I gave you a decent summary here where I see things at the moment.
We'll have more with Mark Leibovit right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Mark Leibovit. Mark, Bitcoin has fallen from a high of about $124,000 down to the 60s. Do you have any idea why the big decline? Are they waiting for this legislation you've been talking about?
You know, my interpretation is more cyclical, and we can get into a lot of details about that, but there are a lot of cycles that Bitcoin has followed in its short-lived existence here in the last 15 or so years. It seemed to be pretty reliable, you know, various cycle periods that, you know, like we have the U.S. presidential cycle every 4 years and so forth, a lot of cycles that you could measure, and it seems to have fallen into a cyclical period. And without going into details on the very specific cycles, there was a cycle top due in Bitcoin. It runs in like every 4, 5, 6 year, these periods where it has big highs, big lows, and one came in last fall, and we actually wrote about it at the time. I think it was last November. We put out like a sell signal, sell all the crypto, sell Bitcoin, that we hit a cycle top, and it sold off big, and then it started to bounce. And, you know, though we sort of keep a core position there in our blockchain letter, bottom line is we hit a big cyclical peak last year, and that cycle was due to bottom sometime between now and the end of this year. So it's sort of a trading cycle. So it, some say it may have already come. Maybe we just hit it. I think Bitcoin got under 60, got to 58,000 or some thereabouts. When you think about the drop from 126 down to there, that's a pretty significant correction. But, the cycles haven't confirmed that a bottom has come in yet, in terms of time. In terms of price, maybe we have. We're not really sure, so we're sort of watching. But in theory, it could go lower into the end of the year. But and then there's also this fear. I mentioned this before with all the quantum computing and Anthropic and all these new powerful AI tools out there that this has been a rumor, and, you know, so maybe there's some meat to it, but, you know, that perhaps some of these high-powered quantum computing programs can break the code of Bitcoin, and if that actually happened, it could destroy it, which eventually would send it to zero. So that's sort of a, you know, hanging fear in the, over the head of some of the traders who are aware of that. Some say it's a remote possibility, but it is a possibility. You know, it wouldn't affect all the other cryptos that are out there. They're not based on this particular formula that Bitcoin is based on, where only so many were created, and they have it every 5 or 6 years, and there was this whole, you know, program created around it. So we talk about Bitcoin, but there's so much else going on in the crypto world. And the Clarity Act that I just referred to, that legislation, really has very little to do with Bitcoin itself. But we also got to keep in mind the government, particularly under the Trump administration, has created or attempting to create a Bitcoin reserve and other things. So we'll see how all this plays out, and maybe that would be an offset to the fear that maybe some programming is going to break the code of Bitcoin. So it looks like... It looks like we're in this corrective period, and we'll have to wait and get some confirmation that it has bottomed. I'm thinking again more toward the end of the year, and we'll just have to, as traders, you know, watch it. But there's so many other places you could be. I mean, if I was going to get involved in the crypto market and you thought we've bottomed, I'd rather be in a diversified fund. There are some funds out there that, you know, own pieces of a lot of the, you know, crypto-related investments, rather than focus only on one coin like Bitcoin. So that's where we stand. Neutral here, hopeful that we're in some type of bottoming process, but it's not really been confirmed.
The Japanese yen is at a decade's low. Does that really impact us here?
Well, the yen is at one of the... it's really one of the biggest macro risks that are really out there yet, out there, because of what's known as the yen carry trade. So the carry trade is has been going on for decades. Investors borrow money in Japan at very low interest rates, okay? So they convert those yen into U.S. dollars, and then they buy high-return assets like U.S. stocks, crypto, corporate bonds, gold, and commodities. So as long as the yen stays weak, the trade is profitable. So this has been the problem now. The yen is recently fell to a 40-year low, prompting warnings from Japanese officials, and markets are watching closely for any intervention. So some analysts believe that there's about 165 yen per dollar area could increase the likelihood of action, and although officials have intentionally avoided it, there's been no specific trigger. So if the carry trade unwinds, that means technology stocks have come under pressure, and that might explain what we saw here in just the recent days, where, you know, some of the high-tech semiconductor stocks started to be sold, because maybe if the carry trade's being unwound, and, you know, this could be, you know, part of the trigger there. So a lot of high beta stocks could suffer, and the U.S. Dollar could weaken, and then the U.S. dollar has been weak the last few days, and that's, you know, some have argued, well, that's why we've seen a little bounce here in silver and gold. So, you know, that's really where it gets interesting. So initially, you know, gold can dip briefly. Investors sell the assets to raise cash, and silver generally sells off more. But when this pattern unfolds, they go just in the opposite direction. So I think the bottom line is we're waiting to see if there's going to be any, you know, intervention on the part of the Japanese government here, and whether that carry trade gets questioned. I mean, we've been writing about this for decades. As long as you can borrow cheap in Japan, and still, you know, if you look back, it was 0% in Japan forever. I mean, that was really the big story for the longest amount of years. Virtually zero, because the U.S. did that for a while too, but then it started to uptick. And this is what got everybody worried, that they're borrowing at zero and they could really put that money to work here. But if it starts upticking, their costs go up, they could start unwinding some of it, and the spread is not worth doing anymore. So that's really what's been happening. The interest rates have been going up in Japan, and the fear of the carry trade kind of getting under risk. So it's, people don't think so much of this. I think the whole world is sort of depend on what the U.S. interest rates are doing and so forth. But, you know, next to the U.S., Japan is one of the biggest financing capitals in the world in terms of accessing capital and all this, you know, borrowing and, you know, strategic investing and activity. So you think, oh, it's China or it's Russia or it's, you know, other locations, but it's Japan. So we'll see how it all plays out. More than likely, the Japanese government's going to try to intervene and stabilize things. But if those rates start upticking and the yen reacts accordingly, there's going to be some risk to the market. Maybe we're going to see more of that this summer. The fact that we saw, you know, cycles saying, well, gold and silver should bottom this time of year. And we just saw the dollar, you know, which had been strong, starting to pull back. This might be a prelude to a little bit more coming up here in the next few weeks. And we're in this Mercury retrograde period now that I just mentioned. So maybe we're going to get a little more volatility here. So it should be interesting how it all plays out. Even so, I'm sure it's temporary, but it's part of the whole volatility game, you know.
Mark, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Thanks for having me.
Enjoy July 4th.
Same to you guys.
My guest has been Mark Leibovit, editor and publisher of the Leibovit VR Newsletters, also known as VRTrader.com. He was speaking to us from Arizona. If you have any questions for Mark or for any of our guests, you can send them to info@HowStreet.com. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on X at How Street. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com, HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.